Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Pehe Amud Bet by the Mishnah. Ve'elu imalu yerdu. If they were put on the Mizbeach, they're taken off the Mizbeach. Basar kodshei kodashim, u'basar kodshei kalim, u'motara omer, shtei alechem, v'lechem hapanim, v'sherei menachot, v'aktoret. So all of these items, if they're put on the Mizbeach, they're taken off the Mizbeach, not because they're not kasher, not that they're pasul in any way, but rather because they don't belong on the Mizbeach. The basar of the Kodshei Kodashim and the Kodshei Kalim are either eaten by the Kohanim or by the Baalim. The Motara Omer is also eaten by the Kohanim. The Shtei Alechem and the Lechem Apanim, also eaten by the Kohanim. The Sherei Menachot V'Aktoret. The Sherei Menachot is eaten by the Kohanim. The Ktoret belongs on the Mizbeach HaZahav, does not belong on the Mizbeach HaChitzon. So since none of these belong on the Mizbeach, therefore if they're put on the Mizbeach, they're taken off the Mizbeach. As the Balei Tosafot point out, even though all of these items are really subsumed under Sheirei Menachot, the Mutar Omer, Shtei Alechem, Lechem Apanim are all forms of Menachot. Nevertheless, they're separated because each one of them has a Chiddush. For instance, the Mutar Omer is different because it's a Matir for the Chadosh in the Mikdash and for the Seorim. And the Shtei Alechem have a Chiddush that they come from Chametz. And the Lechem Apanim has a chedesh because none of it is put on the Mizbeach, only the Bazichim are put on the Mizbeach. So each one of these items, even though they could have been subsumed under the category of Sherei Menachot, the Mishnah mentions them independently because each one of them has a certain unique aspect to it, and therefore you might have thought that it was not under the same rubric, and therefore the Mishnah clearly states that these items are all Achilat Kohanim, exception of Basar Kodshim Kalim, which is Achilat Balim, and because of that they don't belong on the Mizbeach. Now the Mishnah shifts to a new topic. Hatzemer shibrashei kivasim, v'se'ar shibzakein tayashim. This is the wool that is on the head of a kivas, and the hair that is in the chin or the beard of a goat. These are items that normally would not belong on the Mizbeach, but because they're a part of the head of these animals, and these animals, which are olot, they're Evarim are cut up and then put onto the Mizbeach, but they're first flayed, then quartered, and then put on the Mizbeach. The exception to that is the head of the animal, because the head of the animal was already shechted and removed from the animal. So that head does not have a din of hefshet. There's no flaying of it, and there's no cutting of that head. The head goes on whole onto the Mizbeach. And we learned from Sukkim that there's a requirement of haktara of the head of the animal that was cut off. With the head of the animal in the back of the head for the keves, there's some wool over there. And for the goat, there's hair in the front. Vatzamot, the bones. Vagidim, and the sinews. Vakarnayim, the horns. Vatilafayim, and the hooves. Bizman sheim mechubarim. If they are attached to something that does belong unto the Mizbeach, then yalu, then they go onto the Mizbeach. Shenemar, viktir akoinet akol amizbecha. That everything goes on the Mizbeach. Pershu, on the other hand, if they separate away, and they are now distinct from the items that go on the Mizbeach, lo yalu, then they're not put on the Mizbeach, shenemar, vasita olotecha basar v'adam, that it's the flesh and the dam that goes on the Mizbeach, but these other items, which are ancillary, if they are separate and not a part of the basar, then they don't go on to the Mizbeach. So Tan Rabbanan, v'ktir akoinet okol ha-mizbecha, lirabot ha-tzamot v'gidim v'karnayim v'telafayim. So you have the pasuk that says everything goes on the Mizbeach. Again, we're speaking about an ola over here, because the ola is the only one where the evarim go onto the Mizbeach. And so then we're speaking about bones and gidim and all these things that's really uniquely associated with the korban ola. So all of these items, the atzamot, the gidim, the karnayim, the lafayim, they go onto the Mizbeach because of v'ktir akol ha-mizbecha. Yochal afilu pershu, you would think, even if they separated away from the core of the korban, tamalomar vasito lotecha basar v'adam. So basar v'dam is what goes on the Mizbeach. These other items don't go on the Mizbeach. I basar v'dam, with basar v'dam, yachol, yachlots gidim v'atzamot. So you would think then there's a requirement that you separate away, you cut away the gidim and the atzamot, v'yalev basar the gabei Mizbeach, and then the basar itself would go on the Mizbeach, but the remaining items would have to be removed before the basar was placed on the Mizbeach. Tamar lomar biktir akoinet akol ha-ketzat. So how does that come about? If you have a pasuk that's telling you that everything goes on the Mizbeach, you have a pasuk that's telling you that these items don't go on the Mizbeach. The answer is, mechubarim ya'alu. If they're attached, if they're still a part of the basar, then they go on the Mizbeach. Pershu, if they separated away or somehow are now distinct, afilu hein berosha Mizbeach yerdu. Even if they're on the top of the Mizbeach, they're taken off the Mizbeach. So we had our Mishnah, and now we had a Braita. Mantano, the Shmaitle, Who is the Tana who has this position? Damar Pirshu Yerdu. That if they separate away from the core aspects or parts of the Korban, that they come off the Mizbeach. Rabihi. That is authored by Rabbi. Now Rashi over here says that's a reference both to our Mishnah and the Braita. I mean, for Rashi, the Mishnah and the Braita are saying the exact same thing, which is a reconciliation between the Pasuk of Iktera Kolam Izbecha and the Pasuk that says, Vasita Olotecha Basar Vadam. The way to reconcile that is, when they're attached, then it's Iktera Kolam Izbecha. When they're detached, then it's Vasita Olotecha Basar Vadam. That is the position of the Mishnah, and according to Rashi, that's the same position of the Braita. When the Gemara says, who's the Tana that says this? That question references both to the Mishnah and to the Braita. And the answer to both of those questions is Rabihi, which we're about to see. That's the position of Rabbi. The Balei Tosafot disagree and say that Rabbi is not the author of our Mishnah, but rather the Rabbonon. And the Gemara's question over here, Man Shmaitle, is a question about the Braita. Who's the author of the Braita? And to that, the Gemara answers Rabihi. So keeping that in mind, now we'll read the Braita, the Tanya. Says that everything goes on his back. There are both atzamot, vagidim, vakarnaim, vatilafayim, afilu pershu. Even if they separate away, aila mani mikayim, vasita lotecha basar vadam. So if you tell me that everything goes on Mizbeach, then what do you do with the pasuk? Vasita lotecha basar vadam. Seems that the din of the korban is related to the basar vadam. Lo malacha ikulei ola atamachzir. Things that are consumed, meaning that they are partially consumed of the olah, you put them back on the mizbech. V'yata mechzir, ikulei gidim v'atzamot. On the other hand, if the gidim v'atzamot are partially consumed and then they came off the mizbech, you don't have to put them back on the mizbech. Tosfot over here discusses why we need this limud. We already had a limud early on, asher tuchal ha'esh, that told us that ikulei olah go back on the mizbech, but ikulei ketoret do not go back on the mizbech. And the Tosafot here tries to understand the difference between limud of ikulei olah versus ikulei ketoret, and what we have here of ikulei olah versus gidim v'atzamot, and he basically creates a tzrichuta, which says that each one of them teaches you a din that you wouldn't have known from the other. But from here you have the Rabbanan's position. The Rabbanan's position is that the gidim, atzamot, and all these pieces go on the mizbeach, whether they're attached or whether they are detached. Now, Rabbi, and this is who we're after here, Rabbi Omer, Ketuv Echad Omer V'Iktera Kohen Et Kol HaMizbecha, Riba, that's an inclusionary term. Ketuv Echad Omer V'Asitu Lotecha Basar V'Adam Mi'et, that is an exclusionary term. Basar V'Adam, yes, other things, no. HaKetzad, how do we reconcile between the Ribui and the Mi'ut? Mechubarim Ya'alu, if they're attached, they go on the Mizbeach. Pirshu, if they detach, afilu hein berosh mizbeach yirdu. Even if they're at the top of the mizbeach, they come off. So it's easy to understand how Rabbi is the author of the Braita, because this is nearly identical to the Lashon in the Braita that we had before. And for Rashi, it's also basically what our Mishnah said. Mi pashtut, the Mishnah says exactly what the Braita says, and this is the reconciliation of these two psukim, and therefore the Mishnah, the Braita, and Rabbi are all one opinion. The Ri over here is midayek out of the Lashon, that it doesn't necessarily have to be the position of our Mishnah, and our Mishnah is actually the Rabbonin. Look in the top Tosafot, he says, Uperish Rashi, Matnitin Alibeyatio, Beri Perish Ki Rabbonin Dafkai, that our Mishnah is really authored by the Rabbonin, Dimigriktani, because it says in our Mishnah, Lo Ya'alu, they will not be put on Mizbeach. Mashma, Dimalu, Lo Yerdu. There it sounds like if they did get on the Mizbeach, they don't come off the Mizbeach. So he makes a diok as a Lashon of our Mishnah, which he thinks indicates that it's at odds with the Braita and at odds with Rabbi. Rabbi says that if they are separated, if they are not a part of the Basar Vadam, then these items, if they go on the Mizbeach, they come off the Mizbeach. And we said, even Afilu Rosh HaMizbeach, even at the top of the Mizbeach, they're going to come off the Mizbeach. Our Mishnah simply says about them that if they're attached, Yalu. If they separate away, Lo Yalu. You don't put them on the Mizbeach. But he says implied in that is, if they do end up in the Mizbeach, then lo yerdu. They won't come off. And that's not true of Rabbi's position. And that's why he believes the Rabbanan are the authors of our Mishnah. So that's the machlok between Rashi and the Ri as to whether Rabbi is the author of our Mishnah or whether the Rabbanan are the author of our Mishnah, the Nafkamina being between them, whether if they did end up in the Mizbeach, do you take them off the Mizbeach? According to Rabbi, yes, you would take them off the Mizbeach. According to our Mishnah, Lo Yalu, they shouldn't go up. But if they do end up on there, you wouldn't take them off. And that's more similar to the position of the Rabbanan. And now the Gemara continues. Pirshu Lo Yalu. So now, the way we have it in our Girsa, there's a quote from the Mishnah. And that means that the statement of Rabbi Zeira is modifying the Mishnah. Rashi, on the other hand, does not have this quotation from the Mishnah. And so for Rashi, the lack of the quotation from the Mishnah makes it that it's modifying the Braita that we brought before. But in the end, it doesn't make a difference, because for Rashi, the Braita and the Mishnah are synonymous, and so therefore, even if the Gemara doesn't have the quote from the Mishnah, it's also modifying the Mishnah, because for Rashi, the Mishnah and the Braita are the same. But for the other Rishonim, who believe that the Mishnah and the Braita are different, then Gemara does quote the Mishnah over here, and then Rabbi Zeira is modifying our Mishnah, which is about Pershu lo Yalu. They separate away, you don't put them on the Mizbeach. But if you look in the Masoret HaShas over here, he indicates that the Girsa should be Pershu Yerdu, which is a reference to a quasi-quote out of the Braita, and certainly not what's found in our Mishnah, because what we have in the Gemara, Pershu Lo Ya'alu, is from the Mishnah. And you can see in the Shita Mekubetzet Obet, he favors that Girsa, he says Yerdu, and then Amar Mar, which means that's a reference to the Braita. And the Balei HaTosafot over here say that was the Girsa of Rashi, and they favor it helpfully, saying that it's a reference to the Braita, because based on their Shita before, that the Mishnah and the Braita are not reconciled, then the Mishnah is speaking about a case where the item is down on the ground. And he says it doesn't make any sense to say something that's down on the ground, it makes a difference whether it's closer or further away from the pyre. When Yon Rosh HaMizbeach, then Pershu, if it separates away, moving towards the pyre versus moving away from the pyre, there would make a difference. And therefore, they think that the statement here of Rabbi Zeira heavily favors modifying the Braita or qualifying the Braita.
Amar Rabbi Zeira, Loshanu Ela Shepershu Klape Mata.
That's only true if the separation was towards the downside. Aval klape malo, if they separate away towards the upper side, kruvehu dakrivu leikule. It's just bringing them closer to being consumed. So now, the understanding here is that you are moving these items towards the mizbeach, and then you put them on the mizbeach. On the mizbeach, somehow they become separated or detached. So depending on how they detach, if they detach in such a manner that moves them further away than where the object is from the Mizbeach, that's already in the process of descending from the Mizbeach, and so therefore you're going to take it off the Mizbeach because they separated away. On the other hand, if they're separating away brings them closer to the pyre, then that's the equivalent of basically taking them towards the pyre. And since that's the case, we don't view them as being separated, we view them as just being brought towards the pyre, and you would continue to put them on the pyre in that case. Where it says, Vafilu Pershu, how can you say that? Even if they separated away, yes, they separated towards the pyre, but they're not on the pyre. So why would you put them on the pyre? Why wouldn't you just take them off the Mizbeach? Remember, the Braita said, and Rabbi said, even Berosh HaMizbeach, you're going to take them off in Pershu. So how can you explain it this way? So Amaraba Hachikamar, this is what is meant to be said here. It's a little bit difficult because here Rab was coming to explain Rabbi Zeira's Shita, which is not typical in Shas. We don't have Rab explaining Rabbi Zeira's position. And as we're going to see, that the Hachikamar of Rab really doesn't fit into what Rabbi Zeira said. And it's very hard to see how Rab is an explanation for that which Rabbi Zeira said. Therefore, the Balei HaTosafot say Amarabba without the Hachikamar over here. And that means that Rabba is an independent explanation of the situation, as opposed to the Girsa that we have, which is Rabba's Hachikamar is explaining Rabbi Zeira, or trying to make sense of what Rabbi Zeira said. And then the Afilu Pershu over here is not like what Rashi said, that it's Bitmiah, and it's a question on the statement of Rabbi Zeira. Rather, Afilu Pershu is a quote from the Braita, and you can see that in the Hakota Bach, Od Aleph, and it's a quote of the Chachamim's position that Afilu Pershu, that they go on the Mizbeach. On that, Rabba is modifying, when is that true, that the Chachamim say Pershu, it goes on the Mizbeach.
Lo Shanu, Ela Shepershu, Lachar Zrika. It's only true if they detached after the Zrikat Adam. Avel Pershu Kodem Zrika, if they detach before Zrikat Adam, Atai Zrika Visharitinu. Then the Zrika comes along and is matir them. Afilu the Meaved Minayu Kata de Sakinai. Even to make from them a handle for a knife. So the idea is that there's a difference at which point they separate away. If they separate away before Zrikat Adam, then the Zrikat Adam functions in a way to be a matir for them. On the other hand, if they separate away after the Zrikat Adam, then they are already on their way to being put on the Mizbeach. So if they separate away after they were ready post-Zrikat Adam, it means that they were already nikva al yaday the Zrikat Adam to be placed on the Mizbeach. And then when they separate away, you have a problem. They have Kedusha in them because of the fact that they were attached at the point of Zrikat Adam. But as a separate entity, they can't be placed onto the Mizbeach. Only if they're together with the item, they have to go on the Mizbeach. So then you end up with a situation where if they're attached, They're going to go on the Mizbeach. If they're detached, they're not going to go on the Mizbeach, but they still retain a level of Kiddusha. And since they retain that level of Kiddusha, then they can't be used, or they still have a problem of Mi'ilah that is associated with them. On the other hand, if they detach before Zrikat Adam, then the Zrikat Adam functions on them to change them from a level of Kiddusha to a level basically of Matnot Kihuna, or something that the Kohanim can get Hana from. So that is that if it happens before Zrikat Adam, then when Zrikat Adam happens, they were already a separate entity. That means they're not designated to go to the Mizbeach. They're on their own. Now, when they're on their own, Zrikat Adam has the ability to mean matir things. For example, we're going to see this in the Gemara in 1 second, when you have a korban that the basar is eaten by the Kohanim, that basar that's eaten by the Kohanim after Zrikat Adam is what makes it mutar. That's what gives the ability of either the Kohanim or the Balim to eat the basar in that instance. And similarly over here, the Zrikat Adam will be matir, these ancillary items, so that now the Kohanim are allowed to get hana from them. And that's what the Gemara says here, Savrala kiha, dam Rabbi Yochanan mishum Rabbi Yishmael. They hold, like that which Rabbi Yochanan says the name Rabbi Yishmael, Nemar lo yiyeh be'ola. It says that the Ola belongs to the Kohen, who does the avoda associated with the Ola, or in essence that the hide that is flayed from the Ola belongs to the Kohen. That's the lo yiyeh. And then Nemar lo yiyeh ba'asham. And then the subsequent pasuk, which is the reference by the Ola, which is Vakohen Makriv et Olat Ish, or Haola, Asher Yikriv, La Kohen Lo Yiyeh. And similarly, by the Asham, Kachatat Kasham Lo Yiyeh, spoken by the Kohen, again, that it belongs to him, there it also says Lo Yiyeh. Ma Asham, just like by the Asham, Atzmutav Mutarim, the bones are mutar to the Kohanim to get hana from them. Af Ola, Atzamot Mutarim. So too by the Ola, the Atzamot are Mutarim. So now, Rashi explains over here, and this is different than Rashi later on in the Masechta. You can see that this Gemara is cross-referenced to later in the Masechta. And later on in the Masechta, Rashi brings a different limud, and he claims the limud that he brings over here belongs to his Rebbeim. So this is the shita that Rashi brings over here, is the shita of his Rebbeim, which he disagrees with later, and the Bali Tosafot also disagree with over here. So Rashi says, well, an Asham, the Atzamot are Mutarim, because the Basar is Mutar. Since after Zrikat Adam, the Asham's Basar is eaten by the Kohanim, included in the Basar that they get to eat are the bones that are inside of it. And just like the Basar is Mutar Ba'achila, the bones are Mutar Ba'hana'ah. So that's a given by the Asham. Then, from Asham, you learn to Ola, that the Ola, after the Zrikat Adam, those areas of the Ola that are belonging to the Kohanim, they're also Mutar. One of those is the hide, so that'll belong to the Kohanim. And here too, the Atzamot, the Gidim, and all those items that are ancillary items, they're only going on if they're attached. If they were detached, then the Dam would be Matir them to be used or benefited by the Kohanim. And that's because of Lo Yeh, Lo Yeh. This Gezeirah Shavah tells you that those items of the Ola have the same din as those items of the Asham. And those items by the Asham are Mutarim. So that's the way Rashi explains it over here. Rashi later on, in the Masechta and the Bayit Tosfot over here, don't like the Limud, as Rashi is going to note in a second from the dissenting opinion who argues on this, that the problem is, an Asham is an item that's Mutar, and the Ola is an item that's Asur. So you're learning from something that's Mutar to something that's Asur, why should that be a paradigm? Of course, the bones that are associated with the basar of the Asham are mutarim, because the whole basar is mutar. It's something that is heter gamur. Now then, we're talking about the gidim, the atzamot, and these other items, which are not necessarily heter gamur, because they have the kedusha of the ola on it. And just because they detach away doesn't mean that that kedusha disappears. So then, why is it that you can learn from an Asham to the case of ola? And so therefore, Rashi later on, the Bayit Tosfot over here explained that the reason that the Atzamot of the Asham are Mutarim is because it says Lo Yiyeh. That's exactly what it is. That's the limud from the Pasuk is Lo Yiyeh, that the Kohen gets the rights to all those items that are there, including the Atzamot, the Gidim, and so on and so forth. It's not just the Basar that the Kohen is granted. So from Lo Yiyeh, that's how you know it by Asham. Then we have a Gezer Shava from the Lo Yiyeh of Asham over to the Lo Yiyeh of Ola to teach you that the same din applies. The Bayit Tosafot say, why do you need the Gezer Shava? If you can learn it from the Lo Yiyeh by Asham, why can't you learn it from the Lo Yiyeh by Ola itself? Why do you need to learn from Asham at all? You have Lo Yiyeh by Asham, and you have Lo Yiyeh by Ola. Just like the Lo Yiyeh by Asham teaches you Heter the Gabei Atzamot, the Lo Yiyeh by Ola should teach you the Heter the Gabei Atzamot. So Tosfot answers that they would have found a different limud. They would have used the Lo Yiyeh for some other limud. It's only because of the Gezeirah Shavah that it forces us to have the limud go in that direction. So the Bali Tosafot deal with that. But in essence, the limud is not a limud because Hashem inherently is mutar, but it's because Hashem has the limud of lo yeh. The Gemara says about that, mufne. It must be that the terminology lo yeh is extraneous, because if it wasn't extraneous, the lo mufne, igal mifrach. There's a logical refutation of this limud, which is mal Hashem shekein b'saro mutar, exactly what the criticism of that explanation of Rabbi Tav Shorashi, which is that the Hashem is b'saro mutar. And so yes, if you think that's the source for the fact that the Atzmaut are mutar, but it's also maybe the whole reason that the Atzmaut are mutar over there, and then how could you extrapolate that to Hashem? And so since the logic can refute the connection between Hashem and Allah, you need to be mufne, which is that it's an extraneous terminology. And a gzer shova that has mufne can supersede logic. It doesn't have to be governed by the dictates of logic. And therefore, the din that applies to Hashem also applies to Allah, and the Atzmaut are mutarim. And the Gemara says that that's the case because lo yeh yetera ktiv. That lo yeh is extraneous. And as Rashi explains over here, the pasuk could have made perfect sense even without the word lo yeh in it. You could just say, or Allah, asher yikriv la kohen. Lo yeh. That'll be for him, that's extraneous, and that gives you the mufne to create the gzera shovel. Meitiv ravada ba'avo, atzamot kodoshim lifnei zrika mu'alim behen. Atzamot of kodoshim before zrika d'adam, there is mi'ila. La'acha zrika, ain't mu'alim behen. After zrika d'adam, there's no more mi'ila. Vishel ola, this is what we're interested in over here, mu'alim behen ne'olam. They have mi'ila both before and after the zrika d'adam. Obviously, the difference between them is that when it comes to the other korbanot, then post zrikat adam, then the basar has what's called shat heter la kohanim. It's something then that is mutar la kohanim. So even if something goes wrong afterwards or something's problematic afterwards, there's no longer any me'ilah because there was a point in time where it was available to be eaten by the kohanim or permitted to the kohanim. So that's by other kodeshim. By unullah, on the other hand, the basar or the evarim are going to go on the mizbeach. So the zrikat adam doesn't release them or give them any point where it was heter to anyone else. All it does is be matter them to go on the mizbeach. And that's why they retain a din of mi'ilah. But you see from here that even post zrikat adam, there still is mi'ilah associated with the olah. And that's what against what we just said here, that post zrikat adam, that's matir these items, so that there is no mi'ilah. So here it's saying that the atzamot of the olah are permanently in a state of mi'ilah, and if they are misappropriated, you're going to be chayav. Whereas our contention until now was that the zrikat adam was matir the atzamot, so they didn't have a mi'ilah post the zrikat adam. So Gemara says, Ema, mishel olah, you should emend the breita that is brought over here, that say, v'shel olah pirshu lifnei zrika, that if the, in the olah, the items, like the atzamot, separated away before zrikat adam, ain mo'alin behen, then there is no mi'ilah. La'achar zrika, if they separated away only after the zrikat adam, mo'alin behen le'olam, then there is mi'ilah forever. Upliga de Rabbi Elazar, and that is in disagreement with the position of Rabbi Elazar. Dama Rabbi Elazar, this is the girsa that we have here, is the girsa of Rashi. We'll see that the Bayit Tosafot have an alternate girsa. Pershu lifnei zrika. If they separate away before the zrika d'adam, mo'alim ba'en, then there is mi'ilah. Lachar zrika, lo ne'anin v'lo mo'alin. After zrika d'adam, then there's no din of mi'ilah, which means midoraita, there's no din of mi'ilah. But lo ne'anin means there's still an iser d'rabanan. And Rashi says that that view is a derivative of Rabbi Ishmael, says that there is this zera shava of lo yeh from the Hashem to the Olah. And the lo yeh tells you, just like by the Hashem, the zrikat adam is matir the basar, which means the atzamot are also mutarim, even if they are not connected to the basar. So to go to the Olah, post the zrikat adam, the atzamot are not chayav in mi'ilah. So according to the girsa that Rashi has over here, Rabbi Elazar is arguing on both dinim that were proposed by Rabbo. The first din that Rabbo proposed is that when it separates before zrikat adam, it is mutar. Over here, Rabbi Elazar says, if it separates away before zrikat adam, mo'alim ben, there is mi'ilah in them. And it remains that way because they were never released from their isur of mi'ilah, or their isur of kedusha. And then, beyond that, la'char zrikat adam, if it separates away, according to Rabbo, then there is a din of mi'ilah, or a problem associated with them. Whereas Rabbi Elazar over here is saying that post zrikat adam, there is no din of mi'ilah, though, right? There's only mi'ilah derabbanan. So that is the view of Rashi and the girsa of Rashi over here. On the other hand, the Bali Tosafot point out that there was an alternate girsa over here, and in that girsa it reads, V'yesh svarim degorsim mo'alim behen ad zrika. That if they separate away before the zrikat adam, then there's mi'ilah until zrikat adam. But the zrikat adam is matur them. In that way, it would be parallel with the din of Rabbah, and Rabbi Elazar in that first statement would not be arguing on Rabbah. On the other hand, the latter case, which is post-Zrika, that's where they'd be arguing. Depending on which girsa you have, the girsa that we have an argument on, the girsa of Rashi, then Rabbi Elazar argues on both points of Rabbah, both b'fnei Zrikat Adam and achar Zrikat Adam. On the other hand, in the girsa that the Tosafot bring, then he only argues post-Zrikat Adam, but b'fnei Zrikat Adam, he doesn't argue on that point, because he agrees that Zrikat Adam, if it separates away beforehand, that would be matir, and there wouldn't be any din of mi'ilah. B'chulan shepak'u mi'al gabei ha-mizbeach. Anything that pops off of the mizbeach, lo yachzir. They're not returned to the mizbeach. So Rashi says over here, b'chulan refers to hanach psulim shalu. That references to all the psulim that we had before, as well as ben atzamot v'gidim shelan me'al ha-mizbeach. So here it's referring to both items that were mentioned in the previous Mishnah. Those things that are pasul to go on the Mizbeach. And despite the fact that if they ended up in the Mizbeach, then lo yerdu, they don't come off the Mizbeach. But if they pop off the Mizbeach, then you do not return them to the Mizbeach. And number two, there's a second set of items, which is the items that are attached, they go on the Mizbeach. Then if they pop off later, then they're not returned to the Mizbeach. So Rashi says it's references to both of these items. On the other hand, you can see in the Balei HaTosafot that there is an alternate view that it's not referencing to the psulim that we saw before, because the psulim we saw before said, imalu, lo yerdu, but im yerdu, lo yalu. We already had that mentioned in the previous Mishnayot, and Reish Lakish qualified that in that previous Mishnah by saying, that's only lo achzav v'hem ha'ish. Then they are put back on the Mizbeach. Then how can you reconcile that with the Pukim over here? For that reason, the Baha'i Tosafot think, like Rashi thinks in Masechet Me'ilah, that the reference here in the Mishnah is only to the latter half of the previous Mishnah, which is those Atzamot, Gidim, and those items that go on Mechubarim. So if they pop off later, then they're not returned to the Mizbeach. Now Rashi, when it says lo yachzir, also says something interesting. He says, not that lo yachzir is isur to return them, but rather, eino tzarich lachzir. You do not have to return them to the Mizbeach. And based on that explanation of Rashi, the Balei Tosafot, they come up with ways to reconcile Rashi's explanation that it's referring to a larger set of psulim over here with the Gemara that we saw before, including the possibility that the difference between you must put them back on versus you have the option to put them back on. And the difference of how they came off the Mizbeach, whether they came off the Mizbeach with themselves, or they were taken off the Mizbeach. And through that, he tries to reconcile Rashi's explanation here with the Gemara that we saw before.
You have a coal that popped off the Mizbeach. Lo yachzir. You don't have to return it to the Mizbeach. And Ivarim, shepaku me'agabei Mizbeach. Limbs that are on the Mizbeach. Again, this is going to be a reference to a korban ola. So those evarim that are on mizbeach, kodem chatzot, if they popped off before chatzot, yachzir, then you put them back on. Umalim ben, and they still have a din of mi'ilah if they're misappropriated. Achar chatzot, after chatzot, lo yachzir. Then you can't return them to the mizbeach, or you don't return them to the mizbeach, or you don't have to return them to the mizbeach. Vein malim ben, and then there is no mi'ilah, because naseh mitzvatan. Kishem shamigzbeach mikadesh et ra'ui lo. Just like the Mizbeach is Mikadesh, that which is appropriate to, Kach Akevesh Mikadesh. So too the ramp is Mikadesh, meaning that the ramp has the same capacity to be Mikadesh like the Mizbeach. And now there's a secondary derivative of that, which is, Kashem Shem Mizbeach VeAkevesh Mikadshin Et Ra'ui Lahen. Just like the Mizbeach and the Kevesh are Mikadesh, those things that are appropriate or Ra'ui to be placed on them, Kacha kelim mikadshim. So too the klei sharet in the mikdash are mikadesh ha-ra'ui lahem, that which is appropriate to them. So they don't function in the way that the mizbeach and the kevesh do, which is that they're able to be kolet, psulim, and other things, because that's considered to be quote-unquote ra'ui the mizbeach, the kevesh. That's not what we're saying with the klei sharet. Klei sharet are mikadesh, that which is appropriate for them. And that is because they're klei sharet that are used for liquid measurements. And the cliche that are used for dry measurements. So if you put a liquid in a dry measurement, or you put a solid, yavesh, into a liquid measurement, they are not mikadeshit because it's not ra'ui lo. That's not appropriate. So that's what the Mishnah means over here.
that which is ra'oi, the kli sharet, for that particular kli sharet, it will be mikadesh. And it also has the additional impact of making it that once it's mikadesh in a kli sharet, there's no right of pidyon, which means that it takes it from being kedushat damim to kedushat haguf. That elevation makes it that there's no longer the ability to redeem the kedusha off of the item. But again, it doesn't have the capacity like the mizbeach to mikadesh at apsulim. So now the Gemara asks, heichi dami. How exactly do you have a case here where chatzot is the cutoff? How can you have a line in the sand called chatzot if the question really is whether the item is consumed or not consumed? Which is, id it ba mamash. If an evarim, one of the evarim, comes off the mizbech and still has significance to it, afil dachar chatzot nami. Even after chatzot, it should have to be returned to the mizbeach in order to be consumed. Id leit behu mamash. If it's already totally consumed, then even before chatzot, why do you have to put it back on the mizbech? The whole point of the evarim being on the mizbech is so that they're consumed by the fire. So if they have yet to be consumed by the fire, then they should have to be put back on the fire. If they have already been consumed by the fire, then why do they need to be placed back on the fire? So again, what is chatzot's significance in this? It seems to be a practical question as to whether the item was consumed or not consumed, rather than a time-based threshold. Gemara says, Lotzricha, you don't need it except for Bishrire. So Rashi over here explains that Shrire is when the item is hardened because it's been consumed by fire. It's not at the point where it's already ashes, but rather it's at the point where it's so hard that it's dried out completely. So there is a stage in which the Ivarim still have significance to them, still have mamashut to them, where you'd have to return them to the fire because the mitzvah has not been completed. There's a second set of evarim, which is that they've been on the fire and they've been heated enough to the point where they are dried out and solid. So that is already, but it hasn't reached the point of being efer, of being ashes. Ashes is when it's totally and completely done. So that's what the Gemara is answering here. In the case where it's still an item that has mamashut to it, then you didn't discharge your obligation, and you have to put it back on the fire all night, even after chatzot. If it's already deshen, if it's already ashes, then the mitzvah has been accomplished, and then even before chatzot, you wouldn't have to put it back on the mizbeach. The question comes up with items where there are past the point of being considered basar or mamashut anymore, but they haven't reached the point of deshen. So that's where the Mishnah comes in and says, if it was before chatzot, got to put it back on. If it's after chatzot, you don't have to put it back on. All right, so Gemara says, Menahane Mile. How do we know that the chatzot is the threshold or the cutoff for this? So Amar Rav. Rav says it's because we have a steer on the psukim, and we need to reconcile the psukim. Katuv echad omer kol alayla vihiktir. By the Trumat HaDeshen, it says that it's done kol alayla, and then it says vihiktir. Katuv echad omer kol alayla v'hirim, that all night long v'hirim. Now the truth is that kol alayla sits between the two verbs in the psukim, and it's modifying both of them. As the pasuk says, sa v'tarom et banav le'mor, sotrat ola, hi ha'ola, al mokdal mizbeach kol alayla, ad ha'boker, v'esha mizbeach ukad bo, v'la v'kash shakwe mido ban mechzei paribash apsaro, v'hirim et adesh shetokal ha'esh, et ola la mizbeach, v'samo etz la mizbeach. The kol alayla sits between these two items, the verse of which is Zotarat Olahi Olala Mukda. Being Olam Mukda means the Srepa is Akhtara. That's kol alayla at a boker. Then the Eish Mizbeach Tadkadbo. That's where you need Akhtara. But in addition, there's also Rimat Adeshin. That's also qualified by kol alayla, that there's a Ravat Adeshin kol alayla, which means that there is a requirement of Akhtara placed on the Mizbeach. It sounds like that requirement is to do it all night long. There's also a requirement of Heirim et Adeshin, to take the ashes off the Mizbeach. And that is also modified by Kol HaLayla. That makes it sound like you take the Deshin off all night. So then how do you reconcile between those? Chelkeu, split it. Chetzio l'Haktara, v'chetzio l'Harama. Half the night will be Ra'oi for Haktara. Half the night will be Ra'oi for Harama. That's why Rashi explains over here, that this is basically what we just saw before, in the explanation of the Mishnah as regards to Chatzot, and it derives from the stira that Rav brings over here. As Rashi notes over here, Chetzio l'Haktara, the first half is v'Haktara, lo avi ikul, ilav deshin mamashu. It's not classified as being consumed unless it's completely ashes. So anything that's not completely ashes before chatzot requires haktara, it must be put on the mizbech. Vechetziol harama, the second half is for taking deshen off, afilu kashin shben sheruim laharama. So he says that after chatzot, not only is deshen, the ashes themselves, good enough for harama, even those items, the shriri that we saw before, after chatzot, they're considered to be so dried out, so much on the way to being ashes, that they're actually deemed like ashes. And if you do the trumat deshen from it, then it would be fine, because they are deemed to be deshen, umiu, basar mamash, lekadameimar b'dirikei deshen. But if they were real flesh still, and they were not consumed, then it wouldn't be called deshen. So Rashi's explanation is similar to what we just said before. You have three different categories. You have a category of basar, which always needs to be put on mizbech. Category of deshen that can be taken off the mizbech. They have these shriri, and the shriri are these dried out items that have been on there. They're hardened and dried out, but they're not ashes yet. Before chatzot, they require additional haktara. After chatzot, they're deemed to be deshen, and they're considered like ashes, and they can be taken off the mizbech with the trumat deshen. There's a large Balei Tosfot over here, which argues on Rashi's perspective here. He says, how can you ever say that when it comes to these evarim that are dried out, that they are called deshen? Torah says that you have to do trumat deshen. It has to be taken from ashes. These aren't ashes. You can deem them halachically to be ashes, but they're just not ashes. And you cannot accomplish trumat deshen with it. So at first, Tosfot brings the distinction as being that before chatzot, there's a requirement of haktara and a requirement to replace them on mizbeach. Post chatzot, there's no longer a requirement of haktara because they deem it as if it is deshen. But that's only in the halachic sense that you don't have to continue the haktara. That means after chatzot, if they pop off, you don't have to put them back on because there's no requirement of haktara. But not that it's really deshen, and therefore would not qualify for the trumat deshen. The Balei Tosfot then suggests a different answer, that in order to do trumat deshen, you need absolute ashes. And the only thing you can do with trumat deshen is take it out of the ashes. So then what is the Gemara saying over here when it says that these shrirei after chatzot are considered, according to Rashi, be like deshen? So this is what the Balei Tosfot suggests, that there were two different things that were done with the deshen. There's trumat deshen, which is you take a certain volume of the deshen based on the utensil that was placed in there to grab the ashes off. Then they're taking down the ramp of the mizbech and placed on the eastern side of the ramp, and they're swallowed up there. That's the mitzvah of trumat deshen. Aside from the mitzvah of trumat deshen, there's a separate requirement to take care of the deshen on mizbech, which includes hotzat deshen, the removal of the deshen from the mizbech. Either it got too full, or on a daily basis, machlok and Rashi and the Rambam, as to whether the mitzvah is a daily mitzvah, whether the mitzvah is simply when there's too much in the way of ashes there, they have to take them out of the mizbech. That's called hotzat deshen. And what Tosafot says is, that's what it's meant over here by the fact that the shrirei, these pieces of meat that are already dried out, that they're deemed to be deshen. They're not deemed to be deshen, the fact that they can be yotzei trumat deshen with them, but they are deemed to be deshen that you can throw them into the tapuach. You can put them in that pile of ashes in the middle, because they are sufficiently consumed that they don't have to be on the pyre anymore, and they can join the pile of ashes in the middle. So that's how the Balei Tosafot deal with this, saying that the din of shrirei is different than the din of trumat deshen. And here, this threshold of chatzot relates to this issue as to whether you're allowed to put it onto the tapuach and do a trumat deshen with it, or you can't do that. Now the Gemara says, Meitiv Rav Kahana. This is the Mishnah in Yoma, which says, B'chol Yom, when it comes to trumat deshen, Toreim et ha-mizbeach mikrot ha-gever. He did it from the beginning of the day in the Mikdash, which is somewhere around Alot HaShachar, Krot HaGever, which in the Perushim of the Mishnah in Yoma, some say Krot HaGever, the Gemara says, means literally the Gavro, the individual who used to make the call in the morning and wake up everybody. A Krot HaGever can also be a reference to the rooster's call, like Anoten Sech Vivina Lechim Ben Yom Ben Laila, the call of the rooster in the morning. Either way, it's around the Lot HaShachar that it's done. Osa Muchlo, Milafanav, or sometime a little before it, Oh Me'acharav, or a little afterwards. I mean, it wasn't exactly a Krot HaGever, but sometime a little before, a little afterwards, but around that time, that's when it was done. But Yom HaKippurim, on Yom Kippur, Mechatzot, you did it from Chatzot, the Trumat HaDeshen. Biregalim, Be'ashmoret HaRishona. And in the Regalim, you did it already from the change of the first guard of the night. I mean, if you divide the night into three equal parts, then after the first third of the night has passed, then at that point, they already began to do the trumat deshen. If you're telling me that the threshold of chatzot is a Torah-ordained principle, which based on Rav, which is it's a steer in the psukim and the reconciliation of those psukim, then heche makdeminan, how could it be that we do it earlier? How can we do it any earlier in the night if chatzot is such an essential time threshold? So the real question is from the regalim that are done before chatzot, how is it possible to do Trumat HaDeshen before chatzot? If you're telling me it's absolutely necessary to cross over chatzot to be deemed a deshen. So now the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, this is the girsa of Rashi. As you can see in the parentheses, there was the word Ella. As we've noted many times, Ella means that the Gemara is now rejecting the previous Amoraim statements and moving on with a new position. So if you put in the girsa here, Ella, that means that we are rejecting Rav's reconciliation of the Psukim, or we're not subscribing to his reconciliation of the Psukim. And now Rabbi Yochanan's giving an alternative answer. On the other hand, if you have like Rashi, which is there's no Ella over here, Rabbi Yochanan is building on Rav's reconciliation. And that means that Rabbi Yochanan subscribes to what Rav says. So we'll read it like Rashi, and then we'll explain how you read it in the alternate manner. Rabbi Yochanan mimashma shenemar kol ha'layla. Pasuk says that you do this all night. Well, if you do it all night, obviously that means that you stop or it expires at the morning. So ma talmud lomar ad boker. So then why does the Torah tell you kol ha'layla ad boker? Why do you need that ad boker? It's obviously if it's kol ha'layla, then it's only ad boker. So what is that extraneous ad boker? Tein boker le bokro shalayla. Give a morning to the morning of night. So the morning of night, or the standard boker at night, is a lota shachar. So now when you have here, tein boker, means give another time threshold besides a lota shachar. The way Rashi learns it over here is basically mid oraita. The din is, like we said before in Rav, in terms of chatzot being the cutoff for these items. The only question that Rabbi Yochanan is dealing with is Trumat HaDeshen. And in Trumat HaDeshen, he's telling us that you can do it any time at night, but it's governed by the necessity of the day. So on a regular day, you do it at dawn. On Yom Kippur, you do it at Chatzot. And then on the Regalim, you do it from Ashmorat HaRishona. But that is basic Masua Torah, the Chachamim. The Torah empowered the Chachamim in these instances to define what is the threshold or when is the proper time to do it. And that's what it means. Ten Boker the Bokro. You give another morning or another time period. That's the way that Rashi learns it. Others say that ten boker the bokro means give another window, another threshold. You could say if the second boker is alot hashachar, that means that the first boker is chatzot. Or you could say ten boker the bokro means that it would have been at alot hashachar, but now ten boker the bokro makes it that it's all night long that this din applies, and you can do Trumat HaDeshen all night long. And in that way, Rabbi Yochanan is reconciled with Rav's explanation. Rav's speaking about Evarim. There's a din of Chatzot. Rabbi Yochanan is speaking about Trumat HaDeshen. And Trumat HaDeshen has a different threshold. And in that way, Rav Kahana's question is no longer an issue for Rav, because Rav Kahana is speaking Trumat HaDeshen, and the din by Trumat HaDeshen is different than Evarim.
Hilkach. For that reason, Kol Yoma, Yikrota Gever Sagi. By the time Yikrota Gever, you'll have sufficient time to finish it, to begin the processing of the Korban Tamid at the proper time. Yom HaKippurim, and Yom Kippurim Mishum Chusha the Kohen Gadol. Because of the weakness of the Kohen Gadol, Chatzot, they would start at Chatzot. Rashi over here says that the Kohen Gadol, who had to do all the Avodah on Yom HaKippurim, so that would weaken him significantly, and he was fasting, and it was a difficult day. And if we made him do Trumat HaDeshen at the beginning of the day, that would wear him down even more. So we tell him to do the Trumat HaDeshen at Chatzot, so that he can take a breather or a break after Trumat HaDeshen before he begins the Avodat HaYom. But implied in that is that the Trumat HaDeshen is part of Avodat Yom HaKippurim and requires the Kohen Gadol to do that. But as Baal Tosfot pointed out over here, the Gemara in Yoma makes it sound like that it was not necessarily incumbent upon the Kohen Gadol to do the mitzvah of Trumat HaDeshen, and even a regular Kohen could do the Trumat HaDeshen. The problem that the Baal Tosfot would have with this is that the Gemara does not count amongst the Chamesh Tvilot that the Kohen Gadol does in Yom Kippur, the Tvilah, for the individual who does Trumat HaDeshen. The Kohen who has to do the Trumat HaDeshen needs to have a Tvilah beforehand. And that would mean that the Kohen Gadol now has 6 Tvilot on Yom Kippur, not 5 Tevilot on Yom HaKippurim. In addition, the Mishnayot and Yoma include a lottery for Trumat HaDeshen, which seems to indicate that they threw a lot on Yom Kippur,
in order for the Kohanim to decide who was going to do the Trumat HaDeshen that day. But that implies that the Kohen Gadol himself didn't need to do it. And so that's why they are not in favor of saying that there's a requirement that the Kohen Gadol do this avoda. And therefore, there are those that make the Girsa. You can see that in the Bayit Tosafot, that the Girsa of the Gemara here was Mishum Chusha de Kohen, because the weakness of the Kohanim, we try to do it earlier in the night, so that they do it before they get hungry and they get tired. So that's one way to explain it, that it's really referencing a Kohen and not a Kohen Gadol. The other way to explain it is to say that it is speaking about a Kohen and not the Kohen Gadol, but that's exactly why they're doing it early, Mishum Chosha de Kohen Gadol. A regular Kohen Adjel does it by Chatzot time in order to clear out the decks and make it that there's no pressure when it gets to the morning for the Kohen Gadol. And so because the Kohen Gadol has to work all day, if you push the Trumat HaDeshen too late, it's going to be pressure on the Kohen when it comes to the Avodah of the Tamid. So you want to give the Kohen Gadol the maximum amount of latitude given his weakness or weakened state because he's fasting, and we do that by moving the Trumat HaDeshen earlier. Even though the Kohen Gadol himself doesn't need to do it, but the other Kohen who does it clears the decks for the Kohen Gadol so he can go at a more leisurely pace, which will work out better. The last view is a view that it really is the Kohen Gadol is doing it, and there is a requirement that the Kohen Gadol do the Avodat Trumat HaDeshen on Yom Kippur. But it's not considered to be part of Avodat HaYom, or Avodat Yom HaKippurim. Even though there's a necessity for the Kohen Gadol to go to the mikveh in order to do this, it's not counted amongst the Chamesh Tevilot, because it's not an integral part of the Avodat Yom HaKippurim. And then, the Gemara says, B'regalim, T'nefishe Korbanot, by the regalim, because there are so many Korbanot, T'kadme Atu Israel, because the Jews, or Bnei Israel, started to enter into the Mikdash from the Ashmoret Arishona, from the first watch, meaning the third of the day through the night, Kidiktani, Kidiktani Seifa, as we have in the Seifa of that Mishnah, Lo Aita Kriyat Gever Magat, Ad Shaita Azram Le'am Israel. By the time Kriyat Gever came around, the Azra was packed with people from Bnei Israel. So seemingly, the two are not connected. Meaning that it says that there are tons of korbanot on the regalim. And then it says, because the people gathered in the Mikdash starting from very early in the morning. Well, their gathering there very early in the morning really is only impactful for the subsequent day. It's not impactful from the day that passed. Or what's the correlation between the fact that they got there early in the morning and that there are a lot of korbanot? The answer might be that coming of Bnei Israel early in the morning is indicative of the fact of how many people were there ready to bring their korbanot, and it was an indication of the volume of korbanot. So when it says that because they got there so early, tells you that there were already people waiting to bring their korbanot, or the volume of people that were trying to bring korbanot that day, and that's why it's significant to the fact that there are a lot of people there, and that then caused it to be that taking care of the mizbeach, which means both taking all the ashes and putting them in the tapuach in the middle, as well as doing a tzad adeshin if necessary, and then setting up the maracha for the tamid shel shachar, all of that took extra time on the regalim. And that's why they wanted to get a head start and to do it early, starting from Mashrot HaRishona, in order to be ready for the korban tamid by the time they got there. The other way to explain it is that the entering of the people into the mikdash made it that it was so crowded that it was hard to do the avoda, the Trumat HaDeshen and the tapuach, because there were so many people there. So they wanted to get a head start on that, a jump on that, so they got it done before the crowds got so big that it was difficult for the Kohanim to work in the Mikdash. So for all of those reasons, that we have different time thresholds for when the Trumat HaDeshen is done on the Mizbeach. According to Rashi, that means that Rav already told us the whole din with regards to Evarim on the Mizbeach. If it's Deshen, then it can come off any time. If it is still basar, it stays on no matter what. And then the other possibility, which is that it's shrirei, it's dried out aver, and there before chatzot it has to be placed back on the pyre. After chatzot, it does not need to be returned to the pyre. Then there's another din that Rabbi Yochanan brings, and he agrees with Rabbi Rav's limud. He just now adds on the fact that with regards to Trumat HaDeshen is done at different times during the night and is not necessarily cut off by chatzot because it's a different din than the Ivarim. On the other hand, if you read the Gemara, like the Balei HaTosafot, that says that the word Ela remains in, and therefore it's Ela on Rabbi Yochanan, that means Rabbi Yochanan is really arguing on Rav. And that means he does not accept Rav's explanation of the Stira and the Psukim to say, Chelkeu, split the night in half. but rather he sees the two different psukim speaking about two different issues. Rabbi Yochanan says that the din of haktara all night is a reference to the evarim. The din of harama all night is a reference to trumat deshen. And in that way you solve the steer and the psukim. One is speaking about evarim, one is speaking about deshen. But that's against Rav's position, where both psukim are speaking about the evarim.
All right, we're going to stop here. Two lines from the bottom of Pei Vav Amud Bet.